We are the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short, and this is ACAM Learn.
Welcome to Inside the Teen Brain. This ACAM series will leave you inspired by best practice and armed with tips to transform your work. I'm Dr. Jane Gilmore, and I have a special interest in the teenage brain. From puberty to about the age of 25, the brain is in a unique state, with core drives including identity, novelty, risk, peers, respect, autonomy, and intense emotions. In each episode, we explore one of these developmental drives and answer three big questions. What's the background? So what? And now what? This episode is called Risky Business. And so to our first big question, what does the literature tell us? Risk means that the outcome is uncertain. It might be potentially dangerous, like taking street drugs, but it could be positive, like starting a new class. This episode is one of two looking at different aspects of risk taking. Here we consider the benefits of taking a chance. Another Inside the Teen episode examines the negatives. The biological invitation for risk-taking in adolescence is well established across different generations and different species. We know from Willoughby's review of longitudinal and cross-sectional data that aspects of positive risk-taking may peak later in the developmental period as compared to negative risk-taking behaviour. Risk is often driven by exploration, and as Ellis argues, using an evolutionary framework, it's important for personal development. Taking a positive risk means we're learning, tolerating uncertainty, experiencing failure, and still surviving. Something to consider given the likelihood that there are increasing rates of perfectionism in young people. There are, of course, individual differences. Some young people are risk-averse in general and others aren't. But interestingly, there are indications that those individuals who are risk-takers and sensation-seekers are more likely to take both good and bad risks. While some have a propensity for risk, the setting impacts the individual too. Young people take more risks in emotional contexts, with peers, or where there is opportunity. Lab-based experiments show a generally younger peak in risk-taking as compared to observed natural experiments, leading some to argue that risky behaviour would peak earlier in life if young people were left to their own devices. Our current cohort of young people is sometimes described as generation sensible. Western trends over the last 40 years show falling risks of risk-taking with alcohol, smoking, drugs, and in sexual health, though interestingly, vaping seems an exception. We know that generational shifts in risk-taking patterns can occur, which is consistent with our understanding of the influence of context. So if there's a cohort effect, do we need to encourage a proportion of our young people to find those all-important opportunities for risk-taking, embrace positive risk, and dare to dream? After all, what's life without a little risk? So now we turn to our second big question and ask, so what? To figure out the practical implications, I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Dominique Thompson, a multi-award-winning GP with decades of NHS clinical experience. She's a TEDx speaker and educator and has authored numerous books, including the very popular Student Wellbeing series. President of the Student Health Association, clinical advisor to NICE and Student Minds, Dominique is perfectly placed to help us develop best practice ideas for young people. So welcome to our series, Dominique. It's really great to have you.
Thank you. I'm really looking forward to it.
First of all, can you just tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing now?
Yeah, so I've taken on more of a consultancy role, which I view as being allowed to go behind the curtain in lots of, you know, university institutions to try and help them improve their student mental health, well-being, support. I also go into schools to talk to them and their parents, body and so on, about how we support teenagers in an ever increasingly complex world.
I love that idea of going behind the curtain. And it does suggest that one small change can have a wide effect. It's actually a very interesting position to be in because the effects could be, pretty widespread. So, as you know, this episode focuses particularly on risk taking, and we know that's one of the key tasks of the teenage brain. And I want you to think about the many young people that you support, behind that curtain. Many of whom are making the transition to uni or college, and explain why you think it's important to take risks.
Well, as I try to explain to them, really, when I've been talking to them about some of the things they're struggling with, humans have always taken risks. It's how we've evolved. We didn't sit in our caves with Deliveroo delivering our lunch. We had to go out there and hunt for it, find it, try which berry was going to be okay and which wasn't. So we have had that as part of our history forever. And we still need to be able to take good risks, healthy risks, to explore the world around us, to explore ourselves, to find out what kind of person we are going to be, what we want to be. If we don't do that, if we don't get comfortable with that idea of trying new things, it limits us, really. It limits our opportunities. So I'm a very big fan of taking good risks, whilst of course being aware of what the more difficult risks might be as well. So that's how I try to frame it when I'm talking to young people.
I think that's really interesting to bring in the idea to young people about this sort of personal development. This is something that's good for you, but it's also good for society. I often think about, the benefits that society gets from risk takers, from innovators, think about technology and so on. So it's an interesting philosophical shift sometimes when we talk about risk. The immediate definition is often danger. And here you're turning it around and saying, think about the positive aspects of it. There's lots to be gained from taking a risk.
Oh, absolutely. I think with a lot of these things, unfortunately, young people's minds might immediately go to, what's the worst that could happen? And so I try to swap it around and think, what's the best that could happen? You might try a new sport or a new activity. You go to university and someone says, come along to Ultimate Frisbee. And you think, oh, well, no, I can't do that. I'll look a right wally doing that, or whatever the current word is. I'll look silly doing something I'm not very good at. And there's a risk, it's taking a risk, isn't it? But the best case scenario is, well, even if you don't like it, you might meet a new friend or see a new part of the city or university that you've gone to. So I do try to sort of flip it round the other way and get them to think about what could be the best thing that comes out of this.
So expanding that idea of what the outcome might be, that's really nice. I'm just going to pick you up on that idea of what the current word is, because I did notice in your book you said, do not use the young person's vernacular. Although we must know, what the phrases mean. And you've got a very helpful little list of, what the phrase is and what, what we might suggest it means in more traditional terms.
Oh, I know. I'm regularly told off by my 14-year-old when I say what I think might be the current word. Oh my God, it's so embarrassing. Please don't say that. But so I now just go with my words, the words that were probably only useful, in the 80s. But here we are.
But we have to translate into teens. So I love that. So thank you, because it's actually a very helpful list. Of course, it's always evolving, but it's very helpful. So this idea of exploring the world and thinking about alternative outcomes is fundamental to some young people. And we know, particularly in the media, but in some cases, both in the academic literature as well as the mainstream media, that there's the idea of so-called generation sensible. We know that there are potentially these generational shifts in patterns of risk taking. So do you have experience of Generation Sensible? What is your experience of that group of young people?
Oh, well, I certainly have known a lot of them over my 2 decades of NHS work. I reckoned I did about 78,000 consultations as a GP with students. So now, obviously, I talk to students, but also teens in schools. And I think sensible is probably not, it's not quite the right word, is it? I think there is something more about they're actually well informed. So they're trying to make well-informed decisions, but it's tinged with that anxiety and that risk aversion. And I can't think of a quick word for that, but they are thoughtful. They are sensible to an extent, but for me, the bit that worries me is the risk aversion, the sort of, oh, actually, I won't try that. I won't do that because of what might happen, because of my, you know, worries around it. Which unfortunately, as we've said, means they don't build their confidence in the same way, or they don't discover these new things. So I know that we always like to give it a title, but I think there's something between being well-informed, they're well-educated, but also potentially a bit more anxious than they should be.
So that's interesting. So the sort of emotional context is not implied in Generation Sensible. Yeah. It's almost a suggestion in Generation Sensible that that's an informed choice. Well, I'm choosing not to do that. Mm-hmm. But what you're describing is a group of young people that are anxious and worried and might have taken a chance if they felt that, you know, there was something in it or something that was potentially less dangerous. So that's a really interesting nuance there that you've raised. And I think that suggestion of anxiety, the fear of what ifing, I call this what ifing. What happens if? What happens if?
Yeah.
And you've raised the idea of, you know, there are positive outcomes, but the suggestion that there's a significant number of young people, and you were seeing them in your consulting room, yeah, and you're describing seeing them in schools and universities and colleges as well.
Yes, I mean, I definitely saw what we as maybe medical professionals or public health doctors would be jumping up and down for joy with, because we saw, you know, less smoking, less alcohol, less binge drinking. We know that on a day-to-day basis, that's what's happening. We also know it from studies. I mean, one of the big studies that I read and with fascination was a study. It was led actually by a team from New Zealand. It was about the great decline in adolescent risk taking, and it talked about the five big topics where, you know, we're seeing internationally less smoking, less alcohol, less early sexual contact, less juvenile crime, less drugs. I think I've probably missed one, but anyway, it was that sort of thing. And, you know, we healthcare professionals would be going, that's brilliant, that's what we want, but and this is the problem, it comes with also less going out, less meeting new people, less trying new things, less going to new places. And that's the problem. It's about having a balance where they should be trying some new things. It's normal for teens to try some new things. And in fact, the studies do show that they still try what they call the novel risks. You know, if there's a weird new drug or vaping or something like that, they did try it in quite, you know, big numbers. But it unfortunately plays out that if they're doing all of those things that are bad for them less, they're also doing the stuff that's good for them less. And that for me was the real worry. And I go into universities, as I said, well, post-COVID, certainly I've got lecturers and academics that I'll go and talk to, and they'll say to me, nobody comes to the actual lecture theatre anymore. And if we put to one side the whole issue around cost of living crisis, that many of them have part-time jobs and we didn't see that as much before, if we just look at the ones who could come, a lot of those lecturers were saying to me, they're in their rooms and they're kind of checking in online and they're doing the work. They don't want to leave their rooms. And maybe it's because, you know, for the whole COVID period, of course, they were told, stay at home, don't go out. And when you are told that at such a kind of crucial developmental stage, well, that stays with you. So you go to a new place and it feels safer to be in your room. And it's taking time, I think, for that to fade away and for people, young people, students to, you know, come out, go away to university, of course, to leave home and to try those new experiences. So we are seeing it play out in a very practical, real way.
And it's interesting, as you're describing it, these young people who are apparently achieving very well and possibly, you know, submitting their work on time, perhaps, you know, we might hypothesize a subgroup who have perfectionist tendencies. But actually, we're worried about their long-term personal development because of that difference in these crucial developmental years. You know, the lessons we learn in the teenage years and in early adulthood burn deeply.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, and I can just give a couple of more examples of where I've heard it as well at different levels, which makes me think it's going to come through. As you say, it's coming through for the next generation. Is I've got all the teachers that I talk to who tell me about the kids that won't go on school trips. They won't go, or they'll go for one day, but they won't stay overnight at the camping trip or something like that. Many, many more now. It used to be maybe one in the class would have a personal reason for doing that, but now that it's actually quite a big deal. Or I was talking to a medical school about how they're having issues with their medical students who have signed up for, a pretty challenging course and so on. So they're really academically able and the rest of it, but they don't want to go on placements. They don't want to leave the bit they have become familiar with. So they're 2 or 3 years into their course. That's not even the very beginning. But they're then very nervous and asking, well, can my placement actually be here? Can I stay close to the medical school because I don't want to go away. It feels unfamiliar, it feels uncomfortable. So, in all sorts of very practical ways, we're seeing that anxiety, for want of a better word, that nervousness of new things playing out.
So, I think you talk very convincingly about this group. So, what are we going to do about it? How can we support them? Do you have practical ideas that our ACAM audience could think about in terms of if they recognise this group, who wouldn't necessarily pr be presenting at CAMS? They probably would be under the radar, but nonetheless, they are likely to need support.
Well, let's look at it then as an extra life skill that if you're seeing somebody, you're their therapist in some, but also if you're a teacher or you're a parent, there are things that you can do that build that tolerance around change because nobody finds change comfortable. We know that's a big thing. I mean, that's a normal human thing. But actually, getting comfortable with some change could be seen as a life skill. And so, if you were, seeing this generation, I would be doing, I mean, you might think this is quite odd, but things like if they're coming to see you and you sit in the same place every week or you're in a group, they're doing group work, get them all to move around, get them to sit in a different place. See how comfortable they feel with telling you about how do they go out to either meet their friends or go somewhere. Do they take a different route? Could they take a different route? Just a little difference. Have they tried a new food recently? Get everyone to sort of think about what new food did you try in the last month? And if they haven't recently, get them to think about how they might do that. You're not forcing anyone. I totally understand it's going to, depend on what they're there for, obviously around food and stuff. But the point is, it's about the smaller everyday changes so that when they come to think about going on the school trip or going away to university, that concept of things being different and not always staying the same is already something they're more familiar with than they might have been. And when I've talked to teachers, I've done a couple of inset days, mentioned this sort of phenomenon amongst other things. And I said, I'm not teaching them how to teach, that's their job. But get them comfortable because you know what it's like? You get, I don't know, year nine together, and they'll all come in and they'll always sit with their buddies, but they might know the other people in the class. Try and get them to maybe move around. So they sit with just one other person. So there's no like ganging up or feeling really uncomfortable. Just one person. Sit with someone they don't normally sit with, and just for 5, 10 minutes. Get them to try and have a conversation with that person. You've got to pick when you're doing it. And I do think it's probably better as you go older through the school as well. It's not just building the social skills, but it means that when they arrive at college or uni, they can have a conversation with the person who's in the room opposite them or sitting next to them if they ever get to a lecture theatre next to them. And say, oh, hi. And not just always the kind of what A levels did you do? That kind of really terrified initial talk, but just be a bit more familiar with people who are not necessarily just your friends that you're familiar. It's not rocket science. I'm not saying anything terribly surprising, but it
But I
is
love, but
getting them to do it.
it's such an important one because we know for teenagers, particularly social risk taking is one of the riskiest risks, that is imaginable because of that pull towards peer integration. So I think the idea of a small, gradual, well-timed risk within the social context is a really important one. And getting used to that moment of uncertainty is in social situations is highly valuable. And these are the ideas that we want to be applying day to day. So you're saying it's not rocket science. The simple ideas are the best ideas because those are the ones we can do day after day and become habit forming. So I love that one.
No, that's great. And for the parents, if you're whether you're the therapist or a parent, one of the things I put in my Growing a Grown Up book was about how to get teens and young people to talk to people of different generations. So, when you have your family get together a couple of times a year, might be every weekend, depends on your family, get them used to talking to people from different age groups and so on. It's an easy, safe way, isn't it, to sort of go and have a chat with granny or your auntie Margaret or whatever, because then when you meet your academic lecturer and they're of a different generation or whatever, you are more familiar already with the fact that there are, different kinds of people out there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. So Dominic, we've talked about risk taking, and we know one of the benefits rather of risk taking is that we learn, we can fail and we will still survive, right? We'll make it out the other side. So I think we should take a dose of our own medicine. And I want you to describe an aspect of your work that didn't go as planned, but ultimately it was valuable to you. Can you think of something?
Yeah, I mean, it is true that especially if you are a bit perfectionistic, and I do talk about perfectionism a lot, but with absolute insight that I know where I stand on that scale a little bit, that it's very hard to deal with that sort of thing sometimes. And I do remember, this is going back a bit, but I had decided I wanted to do paediatrics, actually, as a medical career. That was what I was going to do. Spoiler alert, obviously did not happen. But here I was at my interview, and there were five jobs going, and there were six of us sitting there waiting for interviews. So we knew that at the end of the day, somebody would be, the one sent home. And at the end of the day, it was me that didn't get the job. And I was shocked. I mean, I was that really nerdy person who had never even failed their driving test at this point. I was completely flummoxed. I didn't know what had gone wrong. There was no obvious thing. So I walked back to my car after the interview, and I drove back to the job I was doing at the time, because I had to, you were a senior house officer, so a junior doctor, and I had to go to work. And I went into A&E where I was working. I thought, what am I going to do? This was unprecedented. And also, I had no other plan. I now had a gaping hole in my schedule, as they say. So I thought, right, okay, just get on with the shift. So I got on with the shift, and we did have the odd break in those days. I was going to go make a cup of tea or whatever. Went into the staff room, and someone had put up a poster for Rally International, Operation Rally, as it was then, because it's going back a bit. And I thought, well, I've got nothing else to do. I'd sort of vaguely heard of them, but I didn't know what it was. So I contacted them and said, do you need a doctor? And they, yes, we've got an expedition going very soon to Malaysia. I was like, okay, sign up for that. And it was a complete sort of reaction, because I had failed massively, had no plan, no plan B. Thought, right, I'll just do this, fill in the time, and then I'll come back and go for the next, interview when I get back. And I went on the trip, and it was the best thing I probably have ever done in many ways, of the excitement of being on an expedition, meeting different people, looking after young people. It was the first time I was a sort of young person's doctor, and it changed everything when I got back. So it really was quite a sort of turnaround, but I do genuinely believe that thing that if a door closes, another one does open. It may not be quite that sort of obvious or fast, or you may not realize it's a door at that point. But yeah, for me, that has always been something I remind myself when things do not go according to plan.
But that's a brilliant and inspirational story. And in fact, I do some support for young people and students finding jobs and thinking about career paths. And I often say, actually doing something, not getting the job, or doing something and finding you don't like it, is so important, because it allows you to, to fine tune your final path in a way that you wouldn't otherwise do. But I love the idea that, from going from, a considered job into Operation Rally, which I know of is an amazing initiative. So that's fantastic.
Yeah. Very different.
So we've thought about the past a little bit. Let's look at the future now. So I know that you're involved with Ed Watkins and his MRC-funded project Bounce Back, or at least that's part of the project. And the initiative is aimed at developing resilience. And of course, risk taking and resilience making are very closely connected. Can you say a little bit about the project and on what it's aiming to do?
I can
Or
say a little
results,
bit.
if you have
Yeah,
them.
no, I'm. It's sort of early days in that sense, but also I'm part of the clinical advisory group to the whole big project, rather than just sort of definitely involved in one aspect of it, the bounce back bit. So I know about bounce back because it's part of a lot of different things that are happening under the Nurture You umbrella. Which Ed, as you mentioned, is, you know, is leading on. And it is to, it's an intervention to support students at Exeter University with a workbook and a therapist sort of supporting them to see if you can develop that ability to deal with the unexpected and deal with things when they go wrong. So I, like everybody else, I'm waiting to see what the results will be. And in fact, there, you know, the whole team is overseeing sort of a whole range of different interventions to see what works for student mental health and well-being, bounce back being a part of that umbrella group of interventions. So it will be really interesting to see if we can, you know, help students to deal with some of this unexpected stuff that happens in life, because we know that as a whole generation coming through, they are dealing with challenges that are really, you know, quite extreme in some ways, with, you know, whether it's financial or housing, obviously all the academic stuff, and perfectionism and so on. So, you know, it will be an interesting one to see the results of. I'm not the expert, but yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what they find.
Well, maybe you can come back and tell us a little bit about the findings and where next. Which brings us to our final question, the now what. So I would like a tip which could be easily embedded to existing practice, and perhaps, given the topic we've discussed today, something low risk and high yield. What have you got in terms of tips for us?
Yeah, I guess I keep it reasonably simple in that I would say try one new thing this week. It's a weekly challenge, so it's not too difficult, it's not overwhelming. You don't have to, you know, if you're having a bad day, you don't have to feel like, oh, I have to do something every day. I think that if we look to ourselves and to try new things, it will mean different things for different people. For some people, that might be quite a big new thing. It might be, you know, going to a new social group or joining a new sports club, or you know, last year or the year before, I tried paddle boarding, which was a complete and unmitigated disaster. And I won't be doing it again. But I learnt. I learned many things. I learned that it's not for me, but it gave me confidence that I'd tried it. And I think, you know, sometimes we have to try something that's a bit out there. But it might be that you go for a walk round the park and you just go a different way round. I think try one new thing a week. And if people feel comfortable doing that, and if you're a new student, for example, you've just arrived at university or you've just started at college, you know, you're 16, 17, try one new thing. That might be people say we're going for a coffee after the lecture, you know, say yes to that. But it might be that you know, you pick something smaller. It's absolutely fine. That's my tip.
I love that. Try one new thing. And whether we are, you know, thinking about our young people we're supporting or indeed the professionals, it's a great tip. You never know what we might discover about our practice,
yes.
Or, you know, what we might discover in terms of supporting our young people. So that's a great tip that can be applied everywhere.
Yes.
Okay, well, listen, we have come to the end of this episode, and it just remains for me to say thank you, Dominique, for sharing your vast experience with the
Thank
ACAM
you.
audience. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yes, thanks very much indeed.